Claire, thank you very much indeed. So we are we're on the handouts. I apologise that those were not in your booklets. And if you turn the page, you'll see that talk one is entitled, What is Friendship? Can everyone hear okay at the back? Is that... No. Let me move one of these. Is that better? That's louder. Good. Thank you. We're going to do three talks on friendship, and in general, when I've told people that, their reaction has been surprise, followed by a sort of pleased kind of, well, what are you going to say kind of reaction. And I think that's right. I think this is something important, particularly as families and local communities decline in importance in most of our lives. So most of us don't live in the same place for most of our lives. Most of us don't live near where our families do. Whether that's good or bad, that is the reality for most of us, which means that most of our lives are now lived through our friends, are mediated through our friendship groups. And whether or not we're happy with that or not, whether we have the friends we want or we don't have the friends that we want, that has a huge impact on how we feel that our life is going. And I'm acutely aware that in a room with this many people in it, we will be in very different places on that. There'll be some here who feel very let down by their friends. There'll be others who feel they have no time to be a proper friend, who are aware that they let down other people in their friendships routinely. There'll be others who feel the pain of loneliness, and we'll all be in very different places on that. The Red Cross did a large study on friendship very recently. I don't know if you saw this in the papers. And some of the numbers are quite striking. So 18% of people over the age of 16 feel lonely either always or often. So that is 9 million adults in the UK feeling lonely always or often. And there were some surprises in it, that in some ways it is not always the people you would expect. So they asked everybody, who do you think might be lonely? And 70% of people put older people as the category most likely to feel lonely. And actually, that is not true. So I'm aware some people care about statistics. I'm going to choose my words very carefully so that if you care about statistics, you don't have to think about this for the next hour. So here we go. You ready? So actually, the group who were aged over 55 and retired, that group makes up 23% of the population, that group, but only 9% of the lonely, as in that group who answered always or often lonely. So actually, that group, the sort of retired over 55s, seem to be much better at maintaining friendships, doing whatever it is you have to do to not be lonely, than some people in different groups. They're disproportionately not lonely, in fact, which is very interesting, isn't it? And if your mum has been, guilt-tripping you to call her on the basis that she's in that age bracket and lonely, you might just want to quote those statistics at her. And actually, so here are the groups that were disproportionately lonely. Top of the list were those aged 35 and over who've been divorced or separated in the last 12 months. So they were 33% of that group were always or often lonely. Or those with long-term physical or mental health conditions or illnesses, 32% of that group. Or in particular, it's about transport. And I think probably in London you might want to double this. So either health issues or other reasons for having limited access to transport puts you at 30% or 29%. And then the next group, quite a jump down, but the next group was those who've experienced bereavement in the last 2 years at 19%. So actually, it is very likely, if you think of those groups, very likely that in this room and around St. Helens, there will be a number of people who might be lonely or very likely to be lonely. I think it is a huge felt topic, friendship. That's what I'm saying. I think it's something that we care strongly about. There are probably things that you want me to say in the next three talks. Might be different things all around the room. It's a huge felt topic, but the Bible is not prescriptive on friendship at all. We had an evening recently for new parents, at which William dropped his kind of parenting bombshell, which is that there is only one verse in the entire New Testament about parenting. So therefore, do what you like, roughly. Let them swim in the lake, no matter what Claire O'Donoghue says. In risk terms, that is not our position this weekend. Only one verse on parenting. Here's my question. Is there actually a verse on friendship at all in the New Testament? I tried to make a list and looked up other people's lists. And the most distressing, one of the verses on my list, you know that bit in the prodigal son in Luke 15, where the prodigal son goes off with all this money and he spends it all. And while he's got some money, he has all these friends. And then when the money runs out, all the friends desert him. You know that verse? It's not there. It's not in the Bible. There's nothing about friends. I've read it four or five times because I think that is David Watson, I think. The power of a good illustration. It's just not in the Bible. There's nothing. The only mention of friends is the older son. You have never given me a goat to celebrate with my friends. That distressed me. That was about 80% of my New Testament verses about friendship were actually entirely made up. The Bible is far, far more prescriptive on, for example, how you should behave to your enemies. So your enemies, I can tell you exactly how to behave to them. You are to love them, you are to pray for them, and you are to do good to them. So that's, I can give you a very detailed point plan on what you're to do with those. There are lots of verses on how you're to treat everybody, to love your neighbour. You're to seek to do good to them, to do good in society, to do good to those that you work for and who work for you, whether you like them or not. There are any number of verses on how you're to treat everybody in church. And we will end up looking at some of those verses. But they're not really about what 21st century people call friends at all. Again, you do that to people that you really have nothing in common with and that you don't really need to like. So what does the Bible say about how we should behave with friends and how many friends we should need and what a friend is? I think because the Bible isn't prescriptive, that means we need to acknowledge at the very beginning that we will all do this differently and that we will be right to do so. We're all very different people, different backgrounds, different situations, different life stages. And we will all do friendship, I suggest, very differently. It may well be that if these talks aren't just for looking out the window at the nice trees behind me, I hope that during these talks we'll come away with things to think about how to be a better friend. But what I hope we won't end up with is a sort of list of St. Helen's rules on what a good friend looks like and how many friends we should have and that sort of thing. Okay, those are all the disclaimers at the beginning. We're going to do lots of chatting to each other during these talks. If you're feeling bored, just look at William's face and see how much he's enjoying, bearing his soul to those around him as we go through. That'll keep you amused. So what I'd like to do, if you pick up this again, the table at the top should now, if you're a good compliant person, should now be populated with some names in the column on the left, some names of your friends. If you're married, did your spouse make it onto the list? It's just a fun question. See who might or might not be there. What I would like you to do is I'm going to reveal the codes on the picture at the bottom. Okay, so these are invented and you can take these or leave them. This is meant to help you distinguish on that list what kind of friend those people are. Okay, so to sort of separate, so if we work outwards from the middle, BFF, do you know what that means? There you go. So best friend forever, And I'm confident that in not this bookstore here, but in the kind of main Ashburnham bookstore, confident you can find some cards that are all about BFF type friendship. Coming out from Best Friends Forever, RF, do people have any ideas? Real friends. No, we'd say no, real. We're going with real, slightly loaded term. So real friends. Then I've put three different categories of not real friends out there. And did anyone manage to guess what was in my head on any of those? Say again. Once a week is a good guess. No, I've one way is what I put there. So that sort of slightly awkward category of person who you would like to be friends with, but you're not sure they want to be friends with you, or vice versa. So you know, one way. Anyone guess the other two? Yeah, so it's actually companion goes on the other side. Or so GC, good companion or good collaborator. So there I'm thinking of the sort of person who you work with closely in your day job. You get on very well for the purposes of that kind of shared goal stuff. But you wouldn't necessarily mind if they got another job, other than it would be... Yeah, it would be inconvenient. You'd have to retrain somebody else. Or maybe the person that you run the school fair with, they're reliable, they're good, it's worthwhile working with them, but they're not a real friend. Now, and then RC, this is a book that's on the bookstall, down from £5 to £4, Vaughan Roberts, very excellent little book on friendship, kind of thing you could read with somebody, you or a few friends could read it together and terrify each other about how you could be much better friends. He, I think Vaughan writes as a now in his 50s, single man for whom friendship is very, very valuable. And I'll say a bit in a second that he has high expectations. I think it's a very good, challenging book. Again, I wouldn't necessarily want this to be the law book for our friendships. But he has some quotes from Paul Tripp, who is, he was the man with the most extraordinary moustache in Christendom, but I think there are others now. And he talks about people who are regular casual. Regular casual is what RC goes for. We call our easygoing, self-protective, and often theologically platitudinous conversations fellowship, but they seldom ever reach the threshold of true fellowship. We know cold demographic details about one another, married or single, type of job, number of kids, general location of housing, but we know little about the struggle of faith that is waged every day behind well-maintained personal boundaries. Okay, so the regular casual, someone you see often, but they are sort of casual. And then A, did anyone guess A? Acquaintance. Yeah, acquaintance. Does anyone want me to say any of my arbitrary and offensive headings again? Good. Okay, so what I would like you to do now is turn to your neighbour, and you can use your list or not as you wish, depending maybe slightly whether they are named on your list. And what I'd like you to talk about is how do you go about deciding who are your real friends? What counts? What is on the boundary line between your real... And I don't think there's any sort of moral... You know, it doesn't... If somebody is not your real friend, I think they can still be a good person. It's okay. But just how are you deciding who counts as a real friend or not? There's William's face, if you just want... There it is. Okay, so turn to your neighbour, and I'm going to give you 5 or 6 minutes to do that. Thank you. Okay, I wonder if you'd look round this way, please. And could... Oh, that's now very loud. Could we... just share a few of those ideas. So how do you tell, for you personally, no laws, what counts as a real friend or not? What sort of things have we been saying? Length of time that you've known them. I think that's very interesting and might depend on personality. So, some people that I got to know very, very well and became very close friends... were the people that I did jury service with. And what was interesting was that 8 to 10 days locked in a room deciding whether to send someone to prison for 15 years or not was a very accelerated way. But yes, so yeah, have they been your friends for a long time? Might be one for some. Thank you.
Honesty and transparency.
Honesty, I think, gets very close to being a Bible prescription for life. Honesty is lying is wrong, isn't it? But I think transparency is very interesting because there'll be people in the room who find being transparent very straightforward and, in fact, appear to do that with all of their acquaintances. And there'll be other people who actually, by personality, find transparency very difficult or very costly. Does that mean they have no friends or very few friends? So, yeah, no, thank you. I think that's, these are all on my list, but I think that's very interesting. Thank you. Keep going. Trust. Thank you. Yeah, trust. Thank you. You can trust them with your transparency and your secrets. You know how they might respond. Yeah, thank you. Would I feel happy crying on this person? So for some of us, that is a zero list. And for others, that might be a very long list. Yeah, thank you. But again, it's, yeah, what am I comfortable? Can I be me around this person? As well? Yeah, thank you. Thank you. There you go. That's it. So if something is your fault, can you say that it was and get both sympathy and realism? It's interesting, one of the definitions was they will always be on your side, which actually I'm not sure is quite right, is it? You might, in that situation, a real friend might say, yeah, you were wrong. And that might be quite important. Yeah, thank you.
Are you secure enough in the friendship you can tell them one thing that they might find uncomfortable?
Thank you. Can you challenge them on things they might find uncomfortable? And it might actually be that the good collaborator, good colleague, is like that because you never challenge each other and you just get on with the thing that needs to be done and you muddle along. Okay, yeah, thank you. Any other, so one or two more people?
When you stay in touch with them when they move away?
Do you stay in touch with them when they move away? Now, that is a huge one for St. Helens, isn't it? Because a large percentage will move away. Again, can they have been your real friend if you don't stay in touch with them after they move away? There's one where I think we could easily slam a big rule down on, couldn't we? And I'm not sure the Bible does. Could you be a genuine real friend for a season while you're in the same place and then actually allow that to cease when they stop? That's quite an interesting one. Thank you. Yeah.
Just go back one.
Yes. Thank you.
It's very easy to have that one-way relationship and not actually say, hang on.
Absolutely. So where you are Gandalf and you challenge them all the time, but actually if it comes the other way, yeah, absolutely. We thought of, in some discussions I've had, so yes, could you tell them a secret was one of the ones that came high on the list. Could you go and stay with them at no notice? We thought that was quite an interesting one. So could you ring on the doorbell and say, my windows are all broken, I and my children, can we stay tonight? That might be a way of telling. Who can you be yourself, we said. Who do you think understands you? Is that a prerequisite to them being a real friend? Okay, for just a minute, so a much shorter amount of time, I'd like you again in your groups to say how many of each category do you think you personally need? So how many of each category would you like or would you think you need in the best friend, real friend, the other one friend and the acquaintance category? Good. Can you look back round this way? Thank you. Look Look back round this way, please. And again, I suspect that those numbers may have varied wildly around the room. Again, I don't think the Bible prescribes how many, but or even whether you should have a best friend, or how many friends you need. We're going to talk about problems, particular barriers to friendship, particular things that make this tricky. That probably will have begun around the room as well. I'm not really planning to talk about Facebook. I don't think that Facebook or technology is the problem. I think all those things are just modern equivalents of old things that used to exist. So Minecraft is just a sandpit, and The Sims is just a doll's house, and Call of Duty is just toy soldiers. And Facebook is just the sort of round robin letter, or maybe the village hall notice board, or maybe the sort of pen pal. It's just a more convenient way of doing what we always used to do. I think the convenience exaggerates it. I think that the sort of dopamine hit you get from somebody liking your stupid comment or photo is kind of does lead to maybe some problems, but really all it's done is exaggerate what was always there. I think the pressure to have a lot of people at your 30th birthday party is no different really from how many Facebook friends do you have. There was all the same things of, you know, will you gather a load of people that you'll never see again and can't really remember who. And the advantage of Facebook is if it works properly, you have a face and a name. That's the one thing it's useful for, I think. It's a yearbook. With faces and names, and people who put instead a teddy bear, you know, that's not helpful. That is not what you've failed to understand what it's for. I think there are some problems, and again, I'm going to ask you just for a few minutes to discuss, is friendship different if you are male or female, do you think? Is friendship, and in what ways? And then the other one I want to lump in there as well, is friendship different or particularly challenging in a place like London? So male, female and London. What particular differences, difficulties might come up if you are either male or female or in London? Okay, 5 minutes for those. Thank you. Do you want to look up this way again? And I think last time I'll get some feedback on this, but just male, female, and then London. Any comments on challenges of being female or challenges of being male in friendship? Thank you. Let me repeat that. So a stereotype that men don't really need friendship, that if not true, might end up with lots of men not actually reaching out to be friends. See, I think there probably is a kind of the real man is someone who is happy on his own without support from other people. Though, wouldn't want to go so far into prescribing friendship, because what if you are a man who feels they don't need many friends? I've met several men like that, and I think you can go the other way. And most friendship books, including this one, will basically say you're a bad Christian unless you're, you know, weeping and hugging regularly with 10 other people. And that might be a more male discomfort thing than female, perhaps. Yeah, thank you. But I think there is a huge pressure not to need friends, not to be open, and I think there are many, many men for whom that's just not true. Yeah.
It may be more common that male friendships are focused doing things together, whereas, as I understand it,
yeah. Thank you. So that appears to be a useful stereotype, that male friendships may be more around what we are doing together, and that female friendships may be more about what we're talking to each other about. But again, that will not be universally true, will it? Yeah. Thank you. Any challenges to being female in friendship? Sorry, we'll come back, Rishi.
I think off the back of that stereotype, a lot of female-to-female friendships, you get the feeling that the discussion and the intensity of that relationship is all based on sitting down, having coffee and talking, whereas sometimes it's quite refreshing to just be silent and doing things and that be the basis of friendship. But that's not necessarily often.
Yeah, thank you. Let me repeat. So there may well be, because most gender things overlap, there may well be women trapped in a kind of oversharing paradigm who are not comfortable there. But also it may be that a noisy friendship may not be the only and all that is important about friendship. And actually that... that sitting and talking endlessly in a coffee shop may not be everything there is to say about friendship. So I suspect you didn't spend very long talking about the challenges to being female, but because women are good at this, sort of assumption, but that may not actually be right or helpful. Yeah, thank you. I'd stop, Richard. I assume this is not about female friendship. It might be.
It was just an observation of the stereotypes, and we got into talking about actually personality types.
Yeah.
So introvert, extrovert actually can actually overlay either.
Mm. Yep.
And you end up chatting in. So we might be the inverse of men are from Mars and women are from Venus, depending on where we get our energy from and what is our mental.
Yeah. So personality type, culture, where you were brought up, and country you were brought up in may also make a difference. Yeah, thank you. Well, certainly does. London, challenges caused by London.
So when I grew up in the countryside, it was fine to just rock up at your friend's house, see if they were free to hang out. If they weren't, that was completely fine. You weren't, you know, cut to the quick by that spurt. And now it's got to the point where you can't even just telephone somebody for a conversation. You have to text them first to see if they're open for you to then ring them at a pre-appointed time at some point later on. So it's kind of, there's these huge barriers now in the way of actually having any kind of friendship with anyone.
Yeah. There was one made up, I think, largely study that I read that reckoned it takes 90 hours together to get into the real friends category and 200 hours to get into the best friend category. And in London, you know, 90 hours, that, you know, that might take me two decades to... thank you. Other London things.
It's a very transitory population. You may wonder how much you want to invest.
Yeah. Well, I need some kind of covenant. You know, if I'm going to put 90 hours in, I want to know how many years you might be. Yeah. Thank you. Lenny. Yeah. So a general, thank you, London culture of, are you useful to me? I've a number of old school friends I've bumped into in the city who, because particularly if it's Tuesday and I'm quite smartly dressed, will be very friendly, give me their business card, let's meet, let's have coffee, and then just as they're leaving, they just check where I'm working. I'm like, oh, okay, and maybe I don't hear from them. I'm not going to drive much business their way, probably. Thank you.
Charlie, if you find it difficult in London, in city environment, make friends, you should try it in Cumbria.
Yeah.
It takes about 30 years.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think what we don't want to be is kind of mournful. So London means that a huge percentage of the people I've known in my life have lived in London. I don't know them from London at all. They just seem to come through here, or they'll turn up, they'll say I'm flying in from, you know, they're all around the world, but I don't have to go and see them. They come through London. And yeah, that's right. In the country, you sit at the end of your long lane hating everybody who lives around you and planning to drive your tractor through their chickens because once they did something. And yeah, and you are not accepted unless, we lived for 20 years in a village where we were the strangers and the new people. So let's not be too miserable. Go on, Lenny, you can be miserable some more. No?
I was thinking also in London,
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Okay, we're going to pause. These are all things we can keep talking about. A few comments that have partly been said, but I think there's a big difference between friendly and friends. So I think I am very friendly, and I personally would be uncomfortable without a large number of acquaintances and a large number of the next ring in, sort of people with whom I'm doing lots of stuff. But I'm also very, very guarded, I think, and very slow to cross those boundaries into real friend and best friend, and actually very comfortable with a very small number of people in those two inner rings, which is partly why I'm particularly aware that some of the material out there on friendship would actually say I'm a terrible person. And you may want to come and tell me I'm a terrible person. But I think part of that is down to personality. Vaughan's book actually personally left me feeling an enormous amount of pressure until I went away and thought about how many of those Bible verses actually said what he said. So I think this is very good advice for those who want help to be a particular sort of quite intense friend to a number of people. I'm not sure the Bible says we have to do that. One reason I think Claire and I are best friends is that we're both like that. Very good. And one question we might come back to, or you might like to think about, is how many people are you actually capable of being a real friend to? And actually, I think one of the ways London goes wrong is you're trying to do that to too many people. They sometimes say that you're only capable of being friends to 4 or 5 people. And one of the challenges at St Helens, I think, is that if you're going to be around St Helens long term, well, there is the challenge of some of those people keep leaving. There's also the challenge that we might all in this room be really good friends with each other, and we've used up all our 5 friend slots, apart from the new person, or 1 or 2 people in the room who might be wondering why they keep bouncing off, and we haven't got very long to be friends with everybody, so we're all friends with each other, and actually somehow impenetrably like that. Would it ever be right to drop a friend? Gwyneth Paltrow said, to consciously decouple from a friend so that you would have one of those 5 spaces free for somebody else, somebody new. What do you do with the people who want to be friends with you, but you think you don't actually have time to be friends with them? How do you manage that? How does that work? Can you be friends with somebody that you don't like? So see where this, there's lots of biblical material about loving everybody, and you're definitely to love those you don't like. Can you be friends with someone you don't like? Would it be right to leave a church because you didn't have friends there? Would that be a useful part of deciding whether to stay as a church or not? I grew up in a small village at the end of a lane where we all hated each other. And my experience of church growing up was that everybody in my church was about 4 or 5 decades different in age from me. And there was nobody within a 50-year span of my age. So they were very nice to me within the constraints of that, but I didn't really have friends at church. And it never really occurred to us to move church. That wasn't why we were at church. But I'm where a lot of people arrive at church with this kind of expert. Church will find friends for me. A good church will find me my friends. And if they don't, I will leave and go somewhere where I can have friends. Okay, let's pause on that. What I'd like to say, we're now finally properly on the handout. So, and William can relax slightly from now. We're saying, I think, that this is quite a complicated issue. We feel it strongly. It's a huge part of our lives. I think the Bible has a lot to say because the Bible has a lot to say about human beings and relationships. I think the Bible has very little to say about friendship, and what it does have to say is not prescriptive at all. And in particular, we're in Colossians in central focus, aren't we? And judging each other, judging who is a good Christian or who isn't, would be a mistake, I think. So let's have a go at some of what's on the handout, and we will pick some of this up tomorrow as well. I want to look at some Bible overview items. A lot of the children's helpers here this weekend are in Bible overview, so you may like to check whether they think I've got this right. So here are some Bible overview items on human beings and how they might apply to friendship. So turn to Genesis chapter 1, which is where all good Bible overviews begin. I did just wonder that. I did just look at my watch and wonder that.
Yes.
We are. Good.
I have also prepared them for the fact that it might not happen. So,
shall we take 5 more minutes and then all collect our children at that point? How's that? Do we feel comfortable? Is the Sunday school leader says we can do that? Yeah. Good. Let's at least try and begin with number one and number two in 5 minutes, if we can. So Genesis 1. We are created in God's image. Verse 26, let us make mankind, man in our image, after our likeness, which in verse 27 immediately seems to include something of relationality, something of the love relationships that exist at the heart of who God is in the Trinity. So 1 verse 27 goes his, him, them, very quickly. To be created in the image of God is to be male and female. He created them. And that's picked up in chapter 2 and chapter 2, verse 18, which is often misunderstood. 2 verse 18, it is not good that a man should be alone. I will make a helper fit for him. And that is often misunderstood as teaching that everybody should be married. Everybody should be in an exclusive male-female friendship. I think it's not saying that. I think certainly it's saying that maleness on its own cannot do this task. That becomes obvious when you realize that filling the world, having babies is part of this, and that is not possible without female to add to the male. But also, I think this is more about human beings are designed to do things together, are insufficient on their own, and are designed to live and work together. This is a task to help do the job that God has given human beings that is best done together. Which means some of what we were just talking about maleness, is wrong, isn't it? So none of us are to be islands on our own. None of us are to serve ourselves without other people. Certainly in Christian relationships, we are to love and trust each other. And that is part of how we were created to be. Undeniably, that is part of what it is to be human. And that those relationships are designed to be outward looking in service of others, rather than just a friendship that serves me and makes me feel better. But that the primary friendship in all of that in Genesis is the friendship with God. That is the relationship that human beings were created for. That is the capstone relationship that keeps all the others working well. And I've just put 1 Peter 1 on there because I think it expresses this extremely strongly. 1 Peter 1 verse 8. That says, though you have not seen him, Jesus, you love him. Though you do not see him, you believe in him and rejoice with joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory. So true now, even though we don't see Jesus, that he is our friend. True whether we have no one else on our list at all. Maybe you wrote down Fred and George and Bungle just to have some names to put down. Actually, the Lord Jesus is with us, whether we feel lonely, whether we feel popular, whether we feel that we have the friends we need, whether we don't. He is our first friendship, our most deep friendship, and the one that we can truly, lots of the things we set, trust, open up to, who knows us and we can talk to. Let me nudge, though, towards point two as well, though we may need to come back to this as well next time we meet. The Bible overview would say that no part of our humanity is not touched and ruined by sin. And that actually sin is very deeply at the heart of us. And the more that something is written into who we are as human beings, the more sin will affect that and ruin it. The more it's part of the essential of who we are. So Genesis 3:16 gives us one particular ruined friendship in the male-female friendship in marriage and how that will be ruined because of the curse. Galatians 5 I've put down there because it makes it essential and obvious to all of us. There is a conflict in all of us between the flesh and the spirit. And it's interesting, the list of characteristics of the flesh, a number of them are relational. A number of them are things that will always push against being the kind of good friend we've talked about. And verse 26 that ends the list relates it very directly to church relationships and backbiting and competing and those kind of things. Which means that we shouldn't be surprised if friendships are not what we want them to be. I think a doctrine of sin, a robust doctrine of sin, is one of the essentials for wise living, the kind of thing David was talking about this morning, and particularly in the area of friendship, for navigating the letdowns and the sadnesses of friendship, to understand that people are sinful is, and actually very, very liberating. To be a Christian, to know that sin is normal in all of the people that we meet and normal in ourselves is, I think, almost essential for having friends and being a friend. I can think of no single Bible truth that is more helpful. There was an article recently about whether non-Christians make better friends than Christians and exploring several things about that. I think probably that is not true, but sometimes we have this huge high expectation of my Christian friends and how wonderful they will be and how much they'll never let me down. That actually destroys friendship because I've forgotten that they're sinners and that I'm a sinner. And also sometimes we put up a toxic mask in our friends with Christians where I have to pretend I'm not a sinner in order for us to be able to talk, which then actually destroys so many of the things we were talking about, that we're not able to be real friends. And last thing to say on that before we go and get our children, that section of Genesis reminds us that everyone we love, care about, rely on will die. And either they will die or we will. And a number of people have said, as we've been talking about this, actually there are names on that list of friends who I will see in glory, but I can no longer Facebook. Because they're dead. And actually that is an essential part of our understanding of who we're friends with now and how many friends we need and how we'll need to keep maintaining friendships. Okay, I'm going to pause there. We are halfway through some things we were going to say. We'll come back to this tomorrow. If you're collecting children, you need to do that now. I'm going to ask Rory to come back up, if you would. Thank you.